Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Wednesday, September 21st, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, safe to say that the Guardians picked up their biggest win of the season early this morning, late last night, in the wee hours in Chicago. An 11-inning, 10-7 victory that gave them the head-to-head series win for the season against the White Sox, and cut their magic number to clinch the AL Central Championship down to 9.
Yeah, Joe, it was just a wild game. You know, first of all, it was delayed by 40 minutes by rain. Then, there's a missed call at the plate in the sixth inning, which probably could have ended this thing without going to extra innings. And then, a five-run 11th inning by the Guardians. And it still almost wasn't enough because the White Sox scored two in the bottom of the 11th. Just a crazy back and forth game, but a well-deserved win by the Guardians. And they've got that extra inning magic, Joe. They are now 12-4 in extra innings this season.
Yeah, this is we've been saying it all along, the team that won't quit, the team that keeps playing, and they've embodied that throughout the season. The youngest ball club in the majors, and they just don't know what they don't know. They don't know that they're in the thick of this and what to sort of be afraid of at times. They're fearless. They go out there and perform. They've won 13 of their last 16, and they hold their largest lead in the American League Central Division of 5 games now over the White Sox, essentially 6 games, because you've got that head-to-head tiebreaker. They're 61-20 when they score first, they're 41-35 on the road this season. They love playing games at Guaranteed Rate Field. Josh Naylor loves playing games at Guaranteed Rate Field. We saw a little bit of his, a throwback to his May 9th game there when he came up in the 10th and gave them the lead with an RBI single.
Yeah, just, we almost saw the incredible Bulk break loose there. He's shouting from the dugout, into the dugout, and they pitch ran for him, but I don't think it looked for a while like he didn't want to leave the field. He was kind of going back and forth between the dugout and first base, and this guy is hitting 336 against the White Sox this year, Joe, with 3 homers and 17 RBIs. And, number 17 came last night in that 2-run 10th inning. And you would have thought that would have been enough to give them the win. But Elvis Andrus is the man that owns Cleveland's heart and soul. And it doesn't matter if they're named the Indians or Guardians, this guy is – He almost refused to let the White Sox lose last night.
Well, Josh Naylor sort of likes giving it back and forth with the fans there at Guaranteed Rate Field, because when he did come off the field from that for that pinch runner, he had an exchange with them, another shouting match back and forth, and sort of letting that emotion and personality out. We didn't expect to see Emmanuel Clase A out there, essentially blowing suffering his fourth blown save of the season. But again, you start with that extra runner on second base, and when you don't make the first play on a ground ball in front of the mound, things can get harder from there.
Yeah, definitely. That was Class A's, like you said, fourth blown save. But Class A has has pitched in a major league leading 69 games. He's finished a major league leading 61 games. I mean, this guy's been really written hard. And, you know, I think you're going to see a lapse now and then, but, you know, he backed into the wind. His teammates got him the win with the five run inning in the 12th. And I just think it was a sign of how competitive that game was last night, that they could come back, the White Sox, and tie the score against Class A, probably the best closer in baseball.
Yeah, they put up two in the 10th, and then the White Sox matched that with, like you said, Elvis Andrus, the RBIs there. So they come out in the 11th, and they put up five, and it was Miles Straw. Extending his hitting streak to 10 games, the double down the left field line. Miles Straw told us that he's been looking to be more aggressive in the strike zone and looking to pull the ball more, and he did exactly that in the 11th against Jake Diekman, who just had a complete meltdown on the mound against Cleveland for Chicago. Five runs there, and really they continue to add on after Straw's tie-breaking double. It was, you could see the air go out of Chicago's sails. Med Rosario, gets to third base, and they steal and they throw the ball away. He comes home. It was, one thing after another. We'll get to the. No replay slide at home plate, but Ahmed Rosario in that instance really just sort of, took the heart right out of the White Sox, because Yoan Moncada didn't even step to third base to cover the bag.
Yeah, that was that was a crazy inning, Joe. I mean, with that runner on second base, I mean, it turns baseball into a pinball machine. I mean, it's like nothing, all the, the old standards of the game are out the window, because almost anything can happen. And we saw that, in the 10th and 11th innings. It's just like the wild, wild west, everything. It just, the Cleveland stole three bases in the 11th inning. There's wild pitches. And what I liked was kind of the reconnection between Straw and Kwan, the number nine and the number one hitter. Straw gets the big two-run double, and then Kwan holds him home with his fourth hit of the night.
Right, yeah. I wanted to mention Stephen Kwan. He has four straight multi-hit games, and he's batting .524. With a double, a triple, and three RBIs in that stretch. 11 for 21 is Kwan, as hot as Ahmed Rosario was over the weekend. Kwan's kept it going over, into this series with Chicago. He's scored six runs. He's making the top of that order go. And like you said, when Straw is able to connect the bottom of that order back up to the top with Kwan, this offense actually, it's that death by a thousand paper cuts sort of approach, but it works. They don't hit the ball out of the yard, but they do hit the ball.
Yeah, they just kind of wear you out. It's just like it's like that Bugs Bunny, that old Bugs Bunny cartoon, when the guys are just the conga line around the bases never stops. These guys, they just keep running the bases. They keep getting, little singles, a double here, a triple there. And the offense just never stops. When they get rolling, they are a hard team to contain, Joe.
Yeah, up until that 11th inning, though, pretty much the story of the ball game would be the sixth inning, the no call, or I'm sorry, the missed call at home plate. That was Shane Livensparger, the home plate umpire, who had a rough night in terms of the strike zone. I think Dylan Cease would have some creative ways to explain his calls there up until that point, but on a base hit by Josh Naylor, Ahmed Rosario comes around third and keeps going. And, the throw from Elvis Andrus from the short left field gets there, but by according to video replay and every look that we had at it, you know, Ahmed Rosario was safe by a mile. Livensbarger just flat out blew the call, made a bad call, called him out at the plate. Terry Francona came out to argue but couldn't challenge because earlier in the inning before he had lost his challenge on a stolen base attempt by the White Sox where he challenged and they said that Ahmed Rosario's swipe tag didn't touch Elvis Andrus on the foot. So I guess that was pretty much was it more of a failure by Livensbarger or is it a failure on the whole of the replay system that, you know, Tito had no recourse for an obvious missed call?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the rules say what you get one challenge. If you win that challenge, you can continue to keep that challenge. But once you get into the eighth inning, you know, the umpire, the crew chief has the discretion to review a call. So my thinking is, what's the difference between the seventh and the eighth inning? You know, the call took place in the seventh inning, the missed call. And mm-hmm. So you're letting a game be decided by one inning. I mean, is that going to really lengthen this game that much? You know, if you got to go to review, it just seems like a weird, you know, demarcation point between the seventh and eighth inning.
Did Tito really have any thoughts on it or any you know, conversation about his inability to challenge in that situation or his inability to ask the umpires to get together and say, hey, we might have missed this call. Let's check it out to be sure.
Yeah, he said, he said we just didn't have a challenge. You know, I think, he said it would have been really a tough way to, if it had turned out different, if they had lost the game because of that call. He said, I wasn't going to get any sleep, and I hope the umpire wasn't going to get any sleep. He said, I thought the umpire is a conscientious guy, but, you know, that was just a bad, tough call and a tough thing to live with if the White Sox had won that game. But he said, fortunately, it didn't come into play.
Yeah, you know, we go back to over the season, we've seen some tough calls, some missed calls and some weird questionable calls. The one that stands out the most is the blocking the plate call against Austin Hedges earlier in the year. If we go back and look at it, one thing that Hedges said after that was that the umpires don't have any sort of accountability, or they're not held to the same kind of standards that the players and the coaches are. One thing that the NBA does is they release, for every game, they release a last 2 minutes report, and they review every call or no call, and they say whether it was correct or not, and they basically hold the officials accountable for missed calls. I think maybe if a game report released on big plays like that for Major League umpires could be something that would be helpful. I mean, everybody who watched that game, everybody who sees replays of it, is going to know that Shane Livensbarger blew that call. He's going to know it, and maybe it forces umpires to do better and holds them a little more accountable.
Yeah, you know, I think they do get graded, the umpires. I don't know if they're reprimanded or they're fined or, you know, whatever the, Major League Baseball does, after a bad call, this one, you know, replay was put in baseball to protect the umpires, to get the game right, first of all, but to, you know, save the umpires from a Jim Joyce call, you know, from the perfect game against the Tigers, you know, when Armando Galarraga, you know, got, or I think it was, what was it?
Yep.
Armando
mm-hmm.
Galarraga? Yeah. Yep. Was, you know, denied that perfect game against the Indians in Detroit. That's one of the reasons replay was put in. And, you know, the umpires, you know, they work hard. They're trying to do the best job they can. Mistakes happen, but that's why you have replay, to get them off the hook, so to speak. And it's a learning tool as well. But just to say that you have one challenge for the first seven innings. And and if you run out, if you challenge the wrong call and you miss it, you're done. It just seems weird to me. It just seems like strange. I mean, what usually a challenge takes like 2 minutes, you know, a minute, 2 minutes. I mean, and add to the game time, but I don't know. That was just, so, it was a strange play. And so maybe it worked out for Cleveland.
Maybe the solution here is to expand that ability to go to a crew chief review to the entire game. Maybe the solution here would be, hey, I'm going to get together with the other three guys on the field, and one of them might have seen something, and one of them might be able to tell me, hey, it's probably a good idea to take a look at this play because I think you might have missed it just from my perspective. That happens all the time with officials when they get together to conference to try and get the call right. I know from experience as a high school basketball official, you know, when you've got a call and you're not 100% sure about it, you want that assurance from your crew that you're working with to come to you and say, hey, you know, I might have seen something different. Are you 100% sure about this call? I can't imagine that in the moment, Livensparger, as soon as Tito came out there, was adamant about, you know, how right that call was. I mean, he was looking right at it, and it was so obvious that Ahmed Rosario's hand was under the tag and on the plate before the ball got there. I kind of feel bad for him if he didn't think that at the moment, because, you know, if he's sort of hamstrung by it and he's, you know, hey, Tito, there's nothing more I can do. I've got to live with the call that I made. But if somebody comes to me and tells me that they saw something different or, you know, replay reverses it, I'm fine with that. You know, if that's the approach, I'm good with it. But if it's, you know, if it's blindly looking at it and saying, no, I got that call right, then Livensparger should not be working in any important games anywhere near the future.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Joe. And I think that's probably what he told Francona. I bet that's, you know, he said, hey, I may have missed that call, because Francona didn't argue. You know, he was out there for a couple minutes and that was about it. I mean, that's usually a call where you get ejected if you're the manager. So I think something had to, he had to say something, but, you know, that the rules are the rules, and they couldn't challenge it.
Yeah, and just judging from Tito's body language as he was out there, it's like, he might have said, hey, I missed that call. And Tito might have said, well, that's a call you can't miss. You know, that's going to cost us the game. So, you know, just trying to put words into people's mouths, I guess, in that situation. Hey, that's one you can't miss. Try and do better. We hear that so often. So the result of this whole thing, we got to go back. I'm sorry. I got to mention Aaron Civale. That's completely overlooking pretty much one of the most important performances of the season, and completely unexpected. I was, man, going into this game, I was thinking if they get three, maybe four innings out of Aaron Civale, they're lucky. Aaron Civale went out there and, you know, what? He threw 69 pitches, 40 for strikes, you know, just really got them into a position to win the ball game. He left in the sixth inning, you know, started the sixth, went out there. What did you think about the decision to let him go out there for the sixth?
Well, you know, he had only thrown, like you said, six. He finished with 69 pitches. The limit they wanted to put him, they were thinking 70 to 80 pitches. You know, he had five scoreless innings. He really hadn't been in that much trouble. I think you know, they wanted to see if he could get out, you know, get in, you know, with at the top of the lineup, but it didn't work. You know, obviously, you know, then he walks a Moncada. But overall, Joe, I agree with you. I mean, that was really a strong performance by Civale, and it bodes well, you know, for the going down the stretch here. It looks like, you know, you get Civale back in the rotation. You know, Plesac threw a 45-pitch simulated game yesterday for Columbus. You know, I would think he's pretty close to getting back in the rotation. So you're going to be, you know, they have a possibility of being at full strength in the next week or so.
Yeah, that would be the goal, I guess, going down the stretch, is to get everybody back to full strength and fully healthy for, you know, whatever potential playoff matchups there are. Four hits, Only allowed the two earned runs. Those were guys left on base when he exited in the sixth. Only walked one, struck out a pair. But what he really did was he let the White Sox get themselves out. You know, his approach wasn't Dylan Cease throwing 96 and missing the zone. His approach was throw off speed, throw junk, make them expand their zone and, you know, top the ball. How many ground ball outs did he have from Ahmed Rosario and Jose Ramirez in that game? He really, you know, played to his strength, and that was letting the White Sox put the ball in play and basically get themselves out.
Yeah, 10 ground ball outs in 5 innings. Just did a great job. And he said after the game that, you know, he started the game last year that in which the White Sox clinched. So that was a little extra motivation for him last night. And he certainly pitched well, Joe. He was fun to watch, and he looks healthy, and hopefully he can stay in that rotation now.
Yeah, that was great to, even more than, you know, how good it was to see the Guardians win, just to see Savali back and had that smile on his face was pretty important too. So let's have a conversation about magic numbers now, because there's confusion out there and I don't want there to be confusion. We have the magic number listed at 9, but if you go through and figure the magic number by the traditional way, you take 163, you subtract Guardians wins, and then you subtract White Sox losses. Really, the magic number should be by strict definition at 10. But because there's no 163rd game this year, because they go to that tiebreaker scenario to decide who gets the playoff spot if they're tied at the end of 162 games, because of that, essentially, Cleveland holds all the cards in the division. They hold all the cards against the Twins. They hold all the cards against the White Sox now, because in both of those, they've won the season series. And that means that the White Sox have to finish a full game better than them in order to take the spot. Now, if they both finish with identical records at the end of 162 games, I guess they're division co-champions. But the playoff spot is the most important thing, and that goes to the Guardians.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the way it stands. You know, they lead the season series 10-7. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how the White Sox come out tonight, because last night that was a tough loss. I mean, you could tell they put it all on the line, and they just weren't good enough to beat Cleveland. And that was a big win by the Guardians. And you know, going down the stretch, those are the kind of wins you need to you have to have. You know, Miles Straw said that was a playoff game last night, and those are the kind of games you have to win.
Yeah, this is the way the way that the Guardians are playing right now, probably their best baseball, you know, of the year in a stretch since, you know, the games against Minnesota and now in Chicago. It's coming together at the right time. You just don't want them to peak too early. You know, you harken back to that 2017 team that played so well down the stretch, and then, you know, once the postseason started, they, you know, they struggled a bit with the Yankees and couldn't put them away at the end. You know, that's a little further off down the road yet. They've still got 14 games remaining, but in those 14 games, they pretty much just have to play a little bit over 500 ball, and they'll be in the postseason. The earliest they can clinch, if they win out, and if Chicago loses on Friday and Saturday against Detroit, the earliest possible clinch date would be Sunday in Texas. That's a possibility. And it's not likely that they just, you know, go on a roll and win every game from here to Sunday. But, you know, there's a possibility. It could happen. Hoynsie, you could be coming home soaked in champagne on Sunday night.
Yeah, I should have brought my windbreaker or my goggles. I didn't bring goggles, Joe. I'll have to buy some, or swim fins or something.
The ski goggles that all the players like to wear to protect their eyes. Yeah, because make no mistake, Paul Hoynes will be a target in that locker room if they're celebrating. He will definitely get sprayed down.
Tonight, I work the edges in those things, Joe. I don't get in the middle of it.
All right. Let's look ahead real quick to Tristan McKenzie tonight versus Lance Lynn. Lynn, a guy who's given the Guardians a lot of trouble in his last couple of starts, but nonetheless, a guy that they can beat.
Yeah, they beat him once this year in his first start back. He's pitched very, very well against them in his next two starts. This will be the fourth time they face Lynn. You know, he's an old-fashioned fastball pitcher. Here it is, hit it. And, you know, so far, the last two times out, the Guardians haven't done a good job against them. So we'll see how that goes. And Tristan McKenzie, you know, just one of the strangest seasons by a pitcher I've seen, Joe. When he doesn't give up a home run, he's at, what, 11-0, 10-0, some crazy number like that. But it's almost just the opposite when he doesn't keep the ball in the park. But, you know, if he can ever harness that, Joe, how good do you think McKenzie can be?
He's a frontline starter. If, you know, God forbid Shane Bieber decides to walk in a couple of seasons here. They've got their guy to take his place in Tristan McKenzie if he continues on the trajectory that he's on. It's just a matter of cleaning a few little things up. Like you said, keeping that ball in the park is essential for McKenzie. The opponent batting average is ridiculous. It's either they hit a home run or they're just, you know, not getting on base against him. That's you know, it's not like he gives up a ton of traffic on the bases. He just has trouble not giving up home runs.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot like Cease. Cease went into the game last night with only 113 hits in almost 170 innings. I mean, how do you beat a guy like that? Yeah. Well, you know, obviously he has some control problems, but, you know, Tristan, we've seen him conquer the walks, and I think he'll be able to, you know, find a way to keep the ball in the yard.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look for your reports from the ballpark tonight, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.